Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Love Strategies. I'm Nina Atwood, and my goal is to take you on an inspiring journey of self-discovery and relationship recovery. I'm the host of the show, but this is really all about you, and it's for you, the single woman who wants to date smart and find the love of her life. On this show, casual sex is dumb, being choosy is smart, and the prize is a healthy, loving relationship that lasts. So call in, share your dating and relationship stories, ask the questions that keep you awake at night, and get coaching. The number to call in is 347-308-8511. That's 347-308-8511. Now, stay tuned for Love Strategies.
You're listening to Love Strategies. I'm Nina Atwood, your host. And if you're joining us for the first time, welcome back. If you've listened to the show, if you're joining us for the first time, that is, welcome. And if you've listened to the show before, welcome back. Tonight's show is all about how do you date someone at your level. I'm talking about financially. I'm talking about in other ways. If you have ever felt like you were not finding people who measured up to your standards, or if you have ever felt that if you dated someone who was really at your level, you wouldn't want them, then I have a message for you. How do you date someone at your level? Also on the show tonight is the question, what about dating someone who is not yet divorced? Can it work? Should it work? The answer may seem obvious, but I think it has a lot of different layers. So we're going to uncover those layers and get to the truth about dating the not-yet-divorced guy, a.k.a. the married man, or the not-yet-divorced guy. The reason I'm putting it that way is because I think sometimes that is how it's put to you. I'm not yet divorced, as opposed to I am married. So that's how we're going to call it, but we're also going to call it exactly what it is tonight. So not long ago, I got this letter, this email from someone who I'm going to call Laura. That's not her real name. And here is the question that she wrote to me. She said, "Dear Nina, I have been a westbound train since my divorce. I lived entirely outside of my home on my weeks without the kids. I invited no one in. Although I initiated the divorce and was over my ex a long time ago, I had to suffer the death of my middle-class life, and I am making the most of what I have now, but my question is this, can I really date someone who is upper-middle-class when I am not?" Now, for those of you who don't know what a westbound train is, what a westbound train is someone who says I'm available, who is willing to go out and have a date with you, but in reality that person is not emotionally available. That person cannot or will not make a real commitment when the time comes for that. That's what I call a westbound train. So Laura is saying that she has been a westbound train ever since her divorce. So she's really saying that she is not very emotionally available, and in some cases she wasn't even physically available. She didn't feel comfortable inviting people into her house. So my answer to Laura is not just for her. This is for anyone who has ever felt less than, because that is what I hear, that she feels less than the person that she might be considering dating, who whatever she thinks middle class is or upper middle class is. So, you know, on a practical level, there's lots of financial room in between upper middle class and comfortable, quite comfortable. You can be very comfortable without necessarily being whatever. I'm not sure what Laura means by that, but I take that to mean that you not only pay your way and have a decent home, but maybe you have a really nice home, and maybe you have a budget for some pretty nice travel, and maybe you drive a really nice car. So upper middle class, that's how I'm taking it. But the thing is, on a practical level, I don't think that's really what her question is about, or anybody else who might be asking that question. I think the question is about some other issues that I think are more important than exactly how much money somebody makes and do you measure up to that. One issue I think is the one of women after divorce. And the reality is that millions of women every year post-divorce are unable to live at their previous level of lifestyle. And that is because we as women have not yet gotten it. In this culture, we have not yet gotten it that we need to be fully responsible for making a living. My strong and passionate belief is that every woman should be able to support herself and any children she may have at the level that she wishes to live, period. End of statement. You should be able to do that because when you can, when you know that you have the ability to support yourself and your children at the level you wish to live, then when you meet the right guy, first of all, you're going to make a better choice because you will see yourself as equal, not less than. But when you meet the right guy, he adds to your life, but you don't fall into the trap of becoming dependent on him making your life, as in scoop me up, rescue me, take care of me financially, don't make me ever have to balance a checkbook or figure out a budget or do those adult things. I don't want to have to do those adult things. I want you to do that. But when you can do that for yourself, then the man that you meet is going to be someone who is additive to your life rather than being someone who rescues you. And, of course, there's never really any rescuing in life. No other human being can take care of your life that way. So financial strength and earning strength, I think, are just fundamental basic life things that we all need to master, whether you're a man or whether you're a woman. Because to the degree that you have financial and earning strength, you have more choices. I mean, that is just how it works in this life. You have more choices. So if you discover down the road that your husband's all up on Facebook every night connecting with every old girlfriend he ever had and carrying on both emotional and or physical affairs, if you find out he's not the good guy that you thought he was, if he's abusive in any way, whatever those situations are, you should not have to be trapped in a loveless or abusive marriage. So when you are educated, when you have financial strength, when you have earning strength, you have choices. Then you don't feel trapped. Then you don't feel like you have to stay with this abusive guy who doesn't love you or care for you. That is what the power is of taking it into your own hands to be self-sufficient. You know, there was a time decades ago that if you married and let's say you had two or three children and let's say your husband cheated on you and, you know, made your life absolutely miserable, left you for some other woman, back then the courts, meaning a judge, looked on that situation and saw that as grounds to force the guy to pay a very healthy alimony payment plus child support so that basically your lifestyle didn't change much. And the thinking back then was that women didn't know how to support themselves in large to a large degree, and that if a man married a woman and made children with her, that it was pretty much up to him to take care of her. And so he might want to divorce and leave and go be with someone else, but he's still going to have to take care of that first wife and her children, no matter what his current personal choices are. That's how the courts used to look upon it. But that has all changed. The divorce laws have changed. And now almost every state in this country has no-fault divorce. And what that basically means is that regardless of the reasons for your divorce, you go to court only to split the current assets that you have as a couple. I mean, that's really essentially it. And they're largely split down the middle. Even if you hire a bunch of attorneys and you try to fight over it, it's going to be split down the middle unless one person was enormously wealthy before they married, in which case it might be split a little bit different than 50-50. But the courts are no longer prejudiced toward making sure that women get large monetary settlements after divorce the way they once were. It's just not that way anymore. The assumption is, you know, now that we're all equal, that therefore the assets are going to be split pretty evenly. So what that means is that you can no longer, as a woman, bank on this notion of meeting some guy who is going to take care of you in life financially, where you're going to marry him, you're going to have children with him, and you can always count on him to support you financially. I think you have to be real about this in today's world. No one wants to think about it that way. You don't want to, when you're falling in love with someone and planning a wedding, you certainly don't want to think about getting a divorce later. You don't want to think about that. But the evidence is in. We still have roughly a 50% divorce rate. So this summer, when you see slews of people around you getting married, you see all these friends of yours getting married or people that you know, basically, you know, this sounds cynical, and I am not a cynical person, and I don't believe in being cynical, and it sounds that way, but this is reality. Half those couples are going to be divorced somewhere down the road. A significant number of them will get divorced in the first 7 years, because there's a high divorce rate in the first 7 years of marriage, which basically that's your weeding out point for all the people who shouldn't have gotten married in the first place. You know, they fell in love for the wrong reasons. They really completely failed to see how woefully incompatible they were. Then a percentage of couples will continue on for a number more years because they have children together and they want to split up until the children are grown. But then you get a big slew of divorces right around the time that the kids graduate from high school and graduate from college. But the net is roughly half of the people getting married this year will be divorced at some point. So that means you have roughly a 50-50 chance of staying married to the same guy forever. So I think that as a woman, you just can't bank on being taken care of financially by a man for your whole adult life. You have to think about how you are going to make a good living no matter what happens, whether you're in love, whether you're married, or whether you're not. And, of course, if you didn't think about that when you were a lot younger, let's say you're a woman today and you're in your 40s, you're in your 50s, you're going through a divorce, you're listening to the show and you're saying, yeah, well, I thought I was going to be married to this guy the rest of my life. That's what he promised me, but it didn't work out that way. What do I do now? Well, I think that when you are going through a divorce, that there's no better time in life than that time to reevaluate how it is you're going to take care of yourself. It's a great time to go and finish your education or get the education you never got and develop yourself. And you can do that no matter what your age is. You can figure out ways to get an education or get educated in something and get a job and better your life situation. So if that's you, I would encourage you to do that. You know, I talk to a lot of young women who have this goal. They think, well, you know, my goal in life is to be a mom. That's what I'm working toward while I'm dating. I want to find someone really good to marry and start my family. You know, there's almost no higher calling than parenthood, and that's wonderful. But here's the thing. We have not yet figured out how, as a society, to make sure that full-time parents are rewarded monetarily for what they do, separate and apart from participating in joint income participating in the income the other person makes. So if your goal in life is to be a mom, that's wonderful, but realize you're saying, in essence, that you are counting on the father of your children to always pay your way in life, and that just may not come true. So have a plan B. If your goal in life is to meet someone to marry and have children, just make sure that you have taken care of the plan B in case that relationship does not last forever. So that's one of the issues, I think, going on in Laura's question. But there's another one that is going on, I think, a really important issue, and that is the issue of feeling like you're not an equal. So it doesn't matter whether we're talking about money or lifestyle or whether we're talking about who's overweight and who's not, who's beautiful and who's not, or what your age is or any other factor, any other surface characteristic that you look at to try to tag in your mind what a person's worth is. And, you know, we don't like to think we do that, but we do. We do instinctively evaluate one another based on things like money, lifestyle, looks, beauty, age, etc. But here's the bottom line. You can't date someone that you feel is better than you in any way. Because if you do that, you'll do one of two things. You'll either sabotage that relationship, since you don't really feel equal to the person, instinctively you will sabotage it, or you'll not be authentic. You'll not be able to really express yourself freely and be who you are, because you will be fearful that who you are is not enough. Or you'll be embarrassed about who you are and feel the need to cover it up. So it really is just impossible to carry on a real relationship with someone that you feel is better than you. So here's the flip side. You also can't date someone who you feel is not as good as you. Because if you do, if you sit in judgment of that person and don't think they quite measure up to you, then you're going to feel guilty about having those thoughts, having that judgment of them. The other thing is that you will also be unable to be authentic with them because you're covering up those thoughts. And, of course, if you don't think someone really measures up to you, you're not going to feel really good about introducing that person to your friends and family. You may even be embarrassed by them in some kind of way. So that doesn't work. It really doesn't. So how do you date someone that you feel is both, you know, as good as you, but not better than you, not less than, not more than, someone that you feel is basically your equal? I think that it's an inside job. I think the place to begin is how you feel about yourself. So the first thing to do is get clear about your own value and worth. This is for Laura. This is for anyone else who's ever had this feeling. Here's one way that you may begin to tackle that. Sit down today and make a list of the things in your life or about you that you are not proud of, the things that when you reflect on those things, you get a negative feeling about yourself, a negative feeling about your life. So it might be things like, well, my house is really dirty and unorganized. It might be things about being overweight or out of shape. It might be some sort of embarrassment about your job because maybe you don't have the education that you wish you had gotten, that you never finished college, maybe you never even finished high school. Maybe you feel like your job is something that you're a little bit embarrassed about because it's just not the level job that you wish that you had. Whatever it is. But list all of those things that you are not proud of. You know, I've had people tell me they're not proud of the fact that one of their adult children is an addict or an alcoholic or something like that. So you might even have embarrassment about things that are not you, but are the people around you. Maybe it's your family of origin that you're embarrassed about, whatever it is. But write down the things that you're not terribly proud of. And then what I want you to do is go back and put a star by the ones that you actually have influence over. Maybe you even have complete control over it. For instance, my house is dirty and unorganized. You have total control over that. No one is subjecting you to that. You have control over that. If you're overweight and out of shape, you have total control over that. The job, that's a longer runway. There are different things that take more time, but what I want you to do is identify the things that really are within your sphere of influence. You could do something about them if you were determined to do so. Now, pick the one that you are most embarrassed about and make a commitment to yourself to go to work on it. That's it. Make a commitment to you. Here's the thing. You can't make a commitment to someone else if you're not committed to yourself. So if there are things about your life that you're not proud of, things that you have been telling yourself for a long time that you know you need to go to work on, you need to do something about it, you need to begin fixing it, make that commitment to yourself. That is excellent practice for you being able to make a commitment to someone else. Set some kind of goals around it. Get support around achieving those goals, whether you pick a friend and simply say, hey, would you come and sit down with me over breakfast? Let me explain to you what I'm going to be doing. I want you to hold me accountable to this. Maybe you ask a friend to go exercise with you. Maybe you ask a friend to come over and help you clean up and organize your house. Whatever, reach out around you. The people who care about you want to help you. Give them a way to do it. So that's it. Go to work on the first thing, the thing that you're most embarrassed about. Realize that, you know, all of us are a work in progress. None of us is a finished, done deal. But that's the point of life, to work on it, to be engaged and growing and improving in some kind of way. That is the point of life. And I think the real measure of character is it's not that you have your life all perfect and all your ducks in a row and everything all fixed the way you want it. The real measure of character is that you're brave enough to look in the mirror and see who's really looking back to you. And if there's something that you're truly not proud of about your life, to begin to work on it. That's what character is. It's telling yourself the truth and going to work on it, being a human being in process. But being in process, not sitting around every night watching television for 8 hours at a time and doing nothing about your life, but really being at work on it in some kind of way. And now that brings me to the most important thing I want to say about when you're selecting a partner, and that is the real thing you need to be looking for is character. That's what you want to focus on in yourself, developing your own character, strengthening your character, and recovering from your character issues, and then looking for that in another person. Because, you know, we roughly attract people who are at our level. That's really what it is. So when you get your life going the way you really want and you feel good about yourself, then you naturally attract someone that you feel good about. That is how it works. All right, well, we're going to be back with more love strategies after this message.
Hi, I'm Nina Atwood. Does this sound familiar to you? You start a new relationship full of hope that maybe this time he's the one. But weeks, months, or even years later, you realize that although the name and face have changed, the story is the same. He's all wrong for you, and now you have to continue suffering or start all over. Well, you don't have to keep repeating the same old patterns. If you want to raise your relationship game and put yourself on a whole new course for a happy, healthy, lasting love, get Temptations of the Single Girl, the 10 Dating Traps You Must Avoid. This is a self-help book like no other. It's a parable, an easy, fast story you can read in 2 to 3 hours. The fact that it's a story and not just dry, boring data means you'll retain the lessons learned far longer. And the more you retain, the greater the changes you'll be able to make in your life. That's why I wrote it this way, to make it easy for you to get what you need to permanently alter your love life for the better. You can get the book by clicking on the book cover right from the show page, or you can go to singlescoach.com, find the tab for books and tapes, then click on Singles Coach A Store. Temptations of the Single Girl is available through Amazon.com and as a Kindle book. And now back to more love strategies.
All right. You're listening to Love Strategies. I'm Nina Atwood, your host. And we're talking tonight about dating someone you're equal. And the other topic we're talking about is dating someone who is not yet divorced. Can it work? Should it work? Well, here's the question I got recently from someone. I'm going to call her Lindsay, and I'm going to really paraphrase a lot so I don't reveal too much about her or the person she's interested in, and that's for reasons that will become very obvious. So Lindsay wrote this to me. She said, I found your website last night, and Nina, and I listened until 1 o'clock in the morning. Here's what's going on in my life. I recently ran into a man I met nearly 10 years ago. We had a social relationship, but we were both married to other people. Later, I became divorced, and we maintained a friendship for a little while. Then we kind of went separate ways and didn't continue that. Some time passed, and it's now been about 3 years since we had any real contact. Well, not long ago, I was walking through a public place, and there he was in front of me. I got a big hug and a kiss, and we chatted. He said he had tried my old cell number and couldn't find me, so I gave him my new phone number. Then he sent me a text and said it was great to see me, told me I looked gorgeous, and would I like to meet for happy hour. I accepted, and we met 3 days later. Well, 15 minutes into that conversation at happy hour, the floodgates opened. He revealed to me that he's been very unhappily married and was heading for a divorce. And then I told him that I was always very attracted to him on many levels since I first met him. And he said he felt the same. He said he'd been looking for me for 2 years. Needless to say, we both know that we are on the same page in all the important ways. Hearing your opinion on rebound relationships helped me more than I can say. This man has his head on straight, and there's such an attraction. I know in my heart I want to spend the rest of my life with this gentleman. Thank you for your insight, et cetera, et cetera. All right, so after I got that email from Lindsay, I asked her for a few more details, and I found out a little bit more. And here's the rest of the information that I gleaned from her. He is still living in the family home. He has not yet filed for divorce. He wants to wait until his older kids are launched. And there's, you know, obviously they're very attracted to each other. They have a common pursuit or hobby in life that they're both passionate about. Lindsay says to me, Nina, I'm in love with this man. He's such a gentleman, sincere, smart, honest, confident without being arrogant, happy. Wonderful father, he said. He loves his wife, always will, but he is not in love with her. That speaks volumes to me. I've had lots of opportunities to date, but I never felt quite right. This feels 100% right to me. We both believe this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and so on. So here's my message back to Lindsay and also anybody else who is dating or thinking about dating someone who is not yet divorced. And I want to preface it by saying this. There are certainly cases where people meet and one of them is still married to someone else and eventually it all works out and everybody ends up, you know, happy and healthy. But let me just start out by saying those are the very rare exceptions. 99% of the time, it doesn't work out that way. And here's why. I'm going to explain how this actually works. So it's shaky ground on which to begin a relationship. And I'm going to speak very passionately about this because I have a lot of experience in this area, but I don't want you to take it as that I am being right about this. You've got to listen to this. I would ask you to listen to this with an open heart and then make, obviously, you're going to make your own judgment. You may have already made your own judgment call. But here's my take. And I'm going to call your guy Tom. This is Lindsay and Tom, not their real names, but this could be anybody who's in this situation. So here's my take. First of all, there's obviously a lot of infatuation going on. That's what it is right now. You do not know yet if what you are feeling is going to lead to real love, because that's a very different mind state, and it's a very different state of mind and emotion. Real love is very different than infatuation. And you won't know the answer to that until you take your relationship into the real world on a day-to-day basis over a long period of time. So, you know, one of the things Lindsay said to me in her email is that Tom, this guy Tom, has integrity. But I would differ with you on that. I have a different definition of integrity than the one that I think that you are having right now. As a person who is married, and you've been married before, so I hope you can identify with this, but I would never want to think that my husband is out going to happy hour with another woman for any reason, and especially if our marriage is on shaky ground, and especially if he's attracted to her, and especially if our relationship needs work. To me, that doesn't have integrity. That is not a way to honor the vows that we took together as husband and wife. So here's more of my definition of what integrity really is in a situation where somebody is married and is unhappily married and believes they may be heading for a divorce, and then they meet someone and want to have a relationship with that person. Here's how it looks. I believe that the only way to leave a marriage, your current marriage, with real integrity is to earn your way out. And here's how that looks. First of all, you do not begin a new relationship, no matter how tempting it is. That's the wrong time to do it. Second, you communicate to your spouse in no uncertain terms exactly what you are unhappy about, and I mean leaving nothing unsaid that needs to be said. And then you make a commitment to stay with your spouse until that person has a chance to try to make things right with you, to try to fix the things that are making you unhappy, to work on those issues with you and do their best to work it out with you. So in that communication process, you know, I think you really have to, if you are thinking about divorce, I think you owe it to them to tell them you are thinking about divorce and exactly why. You don't have sacred cows that you leave unspoken. You say it all until there's no more left to say. But you do that, you know, really in a heartfelt way. You really do it from a place of care and respect. You do it authentically. You're being very real. This is not a game. This is not, well, I'm going to take that step so I can move myself one step closer to getting the heck out of Dodge. It's doing it authentically with a real commitment on your part to do everything in your power to work out that relationship, and that you leave the question of whether or not you're going to stay together for later. That's not what you're trying to address now. Right now, what you're trying to do is unearth all the issues. I think it's really important as part of that process to own your part in the breakdown of your marriage. You can never really blame the other person 100%. Nobody can do that. It's impossible for only one person to wreck a marriage. So you own your part. That means a lot of self-examination and owning up. Then you ask your spouse if he or she is willing to work on those issues together with this goal. And the goal is to bring your relationship to a state of completion. And what does that mean? Well, completion means that you have said what you needed to say, that you have listened to what the other person has to say, that you have forgiven your spouse for all transgressions, and that you have asked for forgiveness for your own transgressions. Hopefully you'll get that forgiveness from your spouse. But if the two of you, and by the way, this is not a quick process. This is not sit down over an hour or so and you bring the whole thing to closure. This could take hours and hours of your time to have these conversations, to really have them authentically and really get everything on the table, and to really have that forgiveness process for past transgressions. You see, this is one of the reasons that it is so important that you're not in a new relationship. Because if you're in a new relationship, you can't authentically have this process. You can't. You're going to be holding back. There's an essential thing that the other person will not know, and that is, I'm over here falling in love with someone else. Well, if you're falling in love with someone else, you are not present to the person that you're currently married to do this process. That's why it's so important not to start a new relationship until you work on these things and work them out. Then the goal is that through the communication process and the apologies and the forgiveness, that you would bring your relationship to a state of completion. That means we are now whole and complete about the past, or as much as we can get there. And only then do you address the question of whether or not you should stay married. I have seen couples engage in processes like this, fully believing on the front end that there was no way they were going to end up together. And yet when they got through those communication processes, what it opened up was the love they once felt for one another that had been suppressed or that had been contaminated by the difficulties in their relationship. And that if they really fully engaged in this, I've seen them come back to a state of loving each other again, even being in love again. So that is why it's so important to not be in another relationship while you're doing this. But once you get to that state of completion, you live in that question together about whether or not you should stay married until it is really clear that whether or not one of you just really needs to still move on and just can't imagine staying. And usually, if this thing is handled with a lot of respect and dignity, then when you get to that point that it's clear one of you is going to move on, it isn't this horrible, traumatic event. It's usually something that's pretty clear to both people, that there are just some things missing in this marriage, and we love and care for one another, but we need to move on. And so what you're doing is managing your way out of the marriage, if that is what you need to do, in a way that leaves as little damage as possible. And the thing is, you don't rush the process, because rushing a separation and a divorce is a surefire way to leave damage in your wake. You know, I've seen people get hot to trot to divorce somebody. It's as if things have built up in them over years and maybe decades, things that they haven't expressed fully, things that they haven't worked on authentically and openly in the marriage together, and it's all just kind of built up and become a big pile of evidence that I should now get out. And I've seen people get so hot to trot to run out the door now that they've come to this brilliant aha that my life needs to go in another direction. But in their rush to go do that, because that's, of course, all about me, I want that divorce because I'm ready to get out there and date or be with someone else. But in the rush to do that, the other person is often left with a lot of damage, because what the person left behind feels is, why didn't you tell me these things when it was important, when there was still a way that we could work on it? Why did you hold all this back? In my experience in watching so many people go through divorces over the years is that most of the time people do not fully communicate in the marriage. They do not. They hold things back with all kinds of rationalizing and justifying as to why they're holding things back. They don't express things that they really need to express. They let it build up until one day the emotional light switch flips. And once it flips and it goes from on to off, there is no going back. So the point of this process, this earning your way out, is to really honor all the commitments to your spouse that you possibly can, including spousal support and support for your children, and all that has to be negotiated and discussed. But if you really dedicate yourself to earning your way out of a marriage, and you really do it with all integrity, this can take a lot of time. It can take months. It might even take a couple of years to really fully unwind this thing. And here's the deal. This is what I want you to hear, Lindsay. There is no space for a new person to fit into that process without, you know, as I said before, the high risk is damaging the spouse who will be left behind because they find out about you. And then the other thing is you can't get your needs met in that process. Because, you know, let me say a couple of other things about the spouse who Tom is thinking about leaving. You may think she already knows their marriage is over. I'm sure he's told you that it's already over. And you may think that she knows that, but I assure you, that is most likely not the case. If she truly believed it was over and he truly believed it was over and that was fully communicated, I guarantee they would already be separated. They would already be negotiating how they're going to manage the finances and the children. That's just what people do when they both know it's over and they still care for one another. So I think it's highly unlikely that she really knows exactly the status of their marriage. You know, every married guy who wants to date some woman tells the same story. And the story goes like this. I'm unhappily married. I've been unhappily married for a long time. And the rest of the story is, it's just a matter of time before I leave, but I need to wait until after Christmas or until after her birthday or until after our next anniversary. I couldn't possibly do it right before our anniversary or until after the kid graduates or until I get that new job or whatever it is. I mean, there's always reasons and justifications for why I haven't already walked out the door. Every single married guy who dates a woman has an affair outside of his marriage, says all these same things. And of course, wraps it up in the package of, you are so special and different, and you are everything I've ever wanted. You know, it's not a new story. It's a very old one. And he may feel those things about you, but right now, here's the reality, Lindsay. He can't be there for you. He cannot possibly be there for you. If, you know, here's a litmus test. If you found out tomorrow that you had breast cancer, is this going to be the guy who's by your side every step of the way? Is he going to go with you for your chemo treatments and sit by you and hold your hand? Is he going to be there when you get back home and you're sick, you're deathly ill and can't eat, and you're so nauseated? Is he's going to clean up the mess that you leave because you threw up, because you felt so bad? Is he going to go with you to the doctors? You know, no, of course not. He can't. How's he going to explain to his wife why it is that he is spending every evening with you, taking care of you? He can't do that. So he can't be there for you. And I know that I'm painting a dour picture. You know, you may be thinking, well, heck, I'm not sick. He doesn't have to come take care of me. But let's flip it to the other side. What about the big life positive events? Is he going to be there at your side for that? Is he going to be the man in your life who's standing by your side at your next big birthday bash or some award you win at your company or whatever? Is he going to be toasting you in front of everybody? No, he can't, because it's not a relationship in the real world at this point. It's a very one-sided relationship at this point, and I know you feel like you're getting some needs met because he's so adoring of you. But right now, you're so infatuated that these issues may seem minor to you, but later, when the brain chemistry kind of all fades away, these things will bother you, and they should bother you. because the reasons that he's giving you today for not telling his wife and going ahead and moving this forward toward a divorce, well, they'll just turn into newer excuses down the road. And, of course, I've already covered with you the lack of integrity of him starting a new relationship and then trying to go and get away from his wife as quickly as possible. It just doesn't work very well. It leaves a lot of damage. So here's my basic coaching for you, Lindsay, and for anybody else listening to this who is thinking about or in the early days of getting involved with someone who is not yet divorced. And this also goes for people who are separated but haven't yet filed for their divorce, you know, because it's often many of the same dynamics. But here's the coaching. If you really want to give this relationship a real chance, take three giant steps backward. All right? Tell him that he's very special to you, but right now the truth is he's not really available. That's the truth. Put the truth on the table. That's one giant step backwards. The next giant step is ask him what he believes is the right process for him to separate from and divorce his wife. Ask him what that's going to look like. How are you going to do it? How are you going to tell her? How much conversation should, you know, what's your process going to be? Let him express that to you and listen carefully for whether or not he has a real plan. And if he has a real plan, then listen for how honoring it is of her, how inclusive it is of her, how much he's willing to pace that and take his time with it as opposed to, you know, kind of giving her the bum's rush out the door. And then the other thing to listen for is if he has no real plan, you really need to know that that's a timetable of years if he has no plan at this point. But if he does have a plan, listen for the holes in it, or if the plan is all about him and doesn't include her very well, realize that's a plan that's going to leave damage in his wake. But I think that, you know, the third place, the third giant step backwards, is for you to really tell the truth to yourself about what has integrity here. Do you really want to be the woman who is later going to be seen as the woman who broke up their marriage? Because that's how you will be viewed. But if you take these steps back, I think what that does is one of two things. He may, if you step back, go away for good. He may become discouraged, think you don't really love him, blah, blah, blah. So he goes away. He kind of goes back to his marriage and you don't hear from him. And if that is what happens, I promise you, he was going to do that anyway. Or the alternative is that by stepping back, you will create a certain level of tension and longing in him where he begins to realize that he's going to have to manage himself through the current issues that he has if he really wants to win you. So, and if he takes that opportunity and that time to really resolve things, then when he comes back to you, it's so much better. It's so much better. It has integrity that way. You feel better. He feels better. His children will not see you as the person who took their dad away from their mom or who broke up their family, but instead they'll see you as the person who came into the picture after the divorce and therefore not tainted by the divorce. So instead of being the bad person who caused all the pain, you can be the heroine who helps heal the pain. And I think ultimately for that family and your future family with him, it's much more healing if you do it that way. All right, so I hope these things are helpful to all of those of you out there who are struggling with issues around dating and relationships. I want to thank you for joining me on the show tonight. And I especially want to thank my loving and devoted husband, Mark.
Thank you for joining us at Love Strategies. Be sure and visit the premier website for single men and women who want to date smart, singlescoach.com. Sign up for the newsletter and you'll get notifications for this show as well as other free dating tips. If you want a coach to support you in your growth and recovery, go to Singles Coaching on the website and choose personal coaching. That's it for today, and be sure and tune back in for more love strategies so you can date smart and find the love of your life.